I'd like to give a talk about the IndiLight module, which is a control module for blind systems and also for artificial lighting systems. So first I would like to give you a short introduction into the workflow of this, how to set up the IndiLight module. Then I would like to talk about the simulation we did and show you some results. And at the end, I can give you a short outlook on the next step that we are planning to do. We want to apply it in a living lab, actually, in our office. The idea of setting up the IndiLight module is to use, actually, or to facilitate parts of already existing artificial light planning, for example. So we assume that you already have a model of the room, including some interior, which is apparently relevant for lighting. In our case, we start with a Rhino model. We then use the Ladybug Honeybee tools, actually the Honeybee tool, to derive the RAD file. And we also specify in the Honeybee where the relevant points, so where are working places, and where do we need the horizontally luminance and so on. Alternatively, we can, from this RAD file, we then produce the view factor matrix and the daylight matrix, which is used in the radiant retest method then, together with the BSDF. Alternatively, we can directly derive it from the Honeybee, the DMX and the VMX, actually. We assemble it then together in the IndiLight module. We start the pre-calculation, which is actually the major part of the daylight simulation. That's the multiplication of the matrices. For that, we also need some additional information. Till now, it was impossible for us to provide all the information inside the Reno model or the Honeybee. So we have an additional text file where we, IndiLight file actually, where we specify all the other information we still need. The BSDF, for example, we get in this example, we have just a simple Venetian blind with curved lamella. So we derived it directly out of window. If it's a more complex shape of the lamella, then we have to use the GEM BSDF method. Or if available, we can also use measured BSDF apparently. So to show the advantage of such a control module, we usually do some simulations. So in that case, we also apply a thermal simulation in transis. Which shows that for the overall energy of the building, you can achieve quite some, you can save some energy actually. What is the control module doing in each time step of this simulation, or later on if you apply it in a real building, what is done every time step in the real building. So usually you define a time when the simulation, actually the control algorithm is assessing the situation. So as an input, we use focus mainly on outdoor, outside measurement equipment. So we have the solar illuminance and the solar irradiance. So we need this in detail. We need to divide that in direct and diffuse component, because if you just feed in the global illuminance and irradiance, then the split up the sky model is actually not working accurate enough. And for the thermal calculation, we also need the ambient temperature. So in the modules itself, there is a daylight calculation, After that, then there's the artificial lighting calculation and then also the total calculation. So the daylight calculation works like that, that you calculate the amount of daylight you get on the desk. That's one thing. And the other thing is calculates on certain points on the facade the observable luminance for each working place inside. And if one of the workers can see actually a spot which is brighter than the glare limit, which is a fixed luminance, a fixed candela per square meter number, then this facade state is considered to cause glare, and so it is excluded from the choice of possible facade states. After the daylight this vertical illuminance at eye level is also calculated, so not only the horizontal illuminance but also the illuminance at the eye level, which can then be further used, for example, for non-visual lighting estimation. When we have the horizontal illuminance, then we use the artificial lighting calculation. So actually, we figure out how much artificial light we need to get on our threshold on the desk, and we take this result then and go into the total calculation, because the artificial lighting energy amount is also an input for the total calculation. And then after all, we get overall energy demand, the so-called energy demand. Actually, what we are doing is not really an energy calculation in the time step. It's more a power balance, actually. So we figure out what is the room tending to overheat, or is it cooling down? The more it tends to overheat, or the more it tends to cool down, the higher is the energy demand considered for this facade state. And with this output, there is then a cost function formulated, and the facade state with the lowest cost function is then chosen, the lowest value of the cost function. On this study I'm showing you, we excluded this normal calculation, so we just did the lighting calculation. However, we have this the optimization in energy terms just from the artificial lighting energy demand. So the optimization runs now in that way that the artificial lighting energy demand is minimized. That's the only goal which is achieved. When there are several facade states with the same artificial lighting energy demand, then the one with produces the highest vertical illuminance is chosen. So it's set up for the study now. So the setup for our simulation, we used to start with a simple room. This is already known from the task 56. So this room is, as you can see, there are three different windows. We installed three different independable controllable blind systems. We also added some interior, as you can see here, through the semi-transparent walls. And here you can see the setup in detail inside. So just a short overview of what are we simulating. So we have four points for each working position, for each working place, where the horizontal luminance level is calculated. This is used for estimating the artificial energy demand, artificial lighting energy demand. Additionally to that, we also included a grid, so to do the continuous daylight autonomy calculation afterwards. We also have in the middle here, we have additional horizontal luminance measurement points, because the grid is shaded of this device here in the middle, so this separator here would shade some points, so we have additional points up here. And finally, we have the virtual heads of our virtual workers, actually. So here we calculate the vertical illuminance at eye level, and we also use those points for the viewing directions towards the facade. So the facade in this picture would be down here, and every worker can look at the facade, and whenever a worker experience luminance level higher than the threshold, then this mosaic state is then considered to cause glare and is excluded. For the daylighting system, as said before, we just have this simple Venetian blinds. The blind angles, the possible blind angles are shown here, so it's not in infinite accuracy controllable to somehow limit the amount of possible facade states we are facing. They can either be fully deployed or fully reflected, so we don't, at the moment, we don't consider half deployed blinds, which will be an update for later. Today I show you some results for Stuttgart, for Rome and Stockholm. We also will do the simulation and the values you can see here. So this is the SHGC value and the tau value. And the U value, those are taken from past 56. So we try to match the window as it was in this past 56 study. For reference, we used two reference control strategies, which represent more or less the state of the art. So the simple strategy is just to open or close the facade. Either the blinds are completely retracted or they are fully deployed at a constant angle of 45 degrees. Representing for most of the buildings the state of the art. A more sophisticated strategy would be to achieve the cutoff angle. So that means you know what that means. So you close the facade, so the lamella angle so far that the direct sunlight cannot enter into the room, but you keep it as far open as possible, just preventing the direct sunlight. Whenever the solar radiation, global radiation, is below this threshold of 150 watts per square meter, we've chosen here. And for the other strategy, it's 200 watts per square meter. We lower that level, it's open, and otherwise it is deployed. And for additional reference, we have a static calculation with fully reflected blinds and blinds constantly at 0 degrees. Okay, so now for some results. Here we have the continuous daylight autonomy for the ELM module. And as you can see here, we've changed this glare limit. So on the left-hand side, we see the most the most strict glare limit. So here it says 3,000 candela per square meter. That means the facade is closed whenever and any of the workers can see the average. Whenever a worker sees a luminance level of a single point of the facade which is higher than 3,000 candela per square meter, then it is considered glare. And additionally to that, there's also 1/3 of these values, so in this case 1,000 candela per square meter of the mean value for the whole facade. When this is exceeded, then it's also considered glare. So that means on some days the blue sky is already causing glare without the sun inside. We were also experimenting with higher values here, and apparently since we excluded the thermal optimization, it directly refers to a more opening of the facade throughout the year when you have this higher glare value, because there is no other mechanism which would cause the facade to close. For reference, here we have on the left-hand side the rule-based strategy, then the cutoff strategy, which are when you compare it to the before, it is around the result of this 10,000 candela per square meter limit. Most of the time, these limits are exceeded for those tools. So here you can see that the amount of time when the 3,000 candela per square meter limit is exceeded. Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers for the 10,000 candela per square meter limit. I should have brought it to the slide. Sorry for that. And on the left-hand side, we can see the constantly zero degree lamellar position, which would cause the same daylight continuous daylight autonomy than the rule-based strategy almost. And if you apply no system at all, obviously you have the most daylight inside. This is just for reference, yeah. And how is the situation on a real glare metric? So we also calculated the DGP. For that, we applied the ray traverse method, to use the annual simulation for a movement blind system in ray traverse. We had to do a bit of a workaround. So we run the simulation, then we got all the facade states, so actually a timeline of facade states throughout the year. Then we had to sort that out. So for every facade state, we made a run of ray traverse. In that case, it was 108 different facade states which were chosen throughout the year. And so we had to do 108 calls of ray traverse. Then again, we had to assemble it back to get the 8,760 time steps of the year. We have an annual simulation with the time step of 1 hour. And as you can see here, the strict glare limit causes no glare. Yeah, okay. So we have the highest DGP inside here of around 0.2, so which is very low. Unfortunately, the results for the higher glare limits are not finished in time, so I cannot show them today. I will show them show that at CIS, but I hope it finish till then. Otherwise, we will show it in our paper, which will come out in this year, hopefully. Okay. So for reference, also the reference strategies of what about the glare situation here. So same procedure, now just a different strategy. For the rule-based strategy, we can see there are some points where we exceed the, where we have close to 0.5. So this is above 0.47, something like this are the highest values for the rule-based. And for the cutoff, it looks a bit better, but still there are some red dots in here, which indicates that we are above 0.4 in the DGP for those points in time. And no system at all. Apparently, it looks pretty good. I was amazed on this research that if you just apply the zero degree throughout the whole year, then you get, I think the highest values here are 0.35 in this graph. And if you apply no system, then you exceed the 0.5 limit. So this actually is higher than the scale here. So I don't know the highest point here is. I have forgotten. I have to look it up. Maybe 0.6 or something. Okay. We also did the energy simulation. So for those results, it's not very interesting because the Indy Light module was not performing the thermal optimization, so it's not running in a thermal optimal way. And surprisingly, the overall energy demand is comparable for all the scenario we have calculated here. So when we have a higher cooling demand, then we save heating demand and we save artificial lighting. So it somehow adds up to around the same value. So for this to stack the heating, cooling, and lighting energy demand above each other, we have to assume some cooling and some heating system. In our case, we were considering a heat pump for both. So we can refer to electrical energy, and then we can sum it up. That happened here, yeah. So, and as we can see on this side, so the when we have the higher glare limit, the facade closes more often, and we have lower overheating potential. So the overheating potential rises with the glare limit. This is clear. And on the other hand, the artificial lighting energy demand decreases with increasing glare limit. And same is true for eating. When we have a higher glare limit, obviously, we can allow the facade to open more often in winter and we save heating energy demand. But as said, when we switch on the thermal optimization, then we should be able to reduce the overall energy demand further, which is not shown on this graph, but hopefully in the future we will show that result as well. Short outlook. So this is our office where we are, where Martin and I are working, and here we want to apply the IndiLight module to control those two facade systems independently, and also to control all four lighting systems inside the room independently. So always optimizing the lighting situation for the users which are present. Whether a user is present or not, we figure out just by starting a program on the computer. So later on, we should do that with some interior sensor. But right now, we actually don't need any interior sensor. Nevertheless, we have interior sensors, as we can see here, when a user is not present, as it's the case for me on this position. We replace the user with this mock-up, and here we have a camera system up here, which we calibrate for luminance, and then we can get luminance values from the room. Also, a lux sensor is mounted here and down here. This is for comparing the vertical luminance and the horizontal luminance with the simulated values for out of the control system. And for the control, we also build a weather station on the top of the building. So here we have a device, pyranometer, that's the name. We have a pyranometer which is capable of measuring the direct and diffuse solar radiation independently with no moving parts. So that's quite stable, and also a temperature measurement, and this is then used as the input for the control system and controls then our facade. So to model the room, we did not have a 3D model of the room, but we used a LiDAR scan, actually Andreas did this, and then we draw the interior of the room after this point cloud in Rhino, and that we use then in Huntington to get the VMX for this room, which was then used in the control module. Okay, thanks for your attention.